welcome back to... We're calling it Toad Talk this week. We'll get into more about the status and name of this going forward in a little bit. But Billy Wessels, Clint Foster...
You know who we are.
Back as always. But we're joined by, I'm going to say, legend.
Yeah, definitely a Twitter legend as
definitely
far as TCU.
Definitely a TCU offensive lineman Twitter legend. Mr. Olson, how are you doing today?
Guys, I'm good. How's everything going in y'all's world?
We're making it. We're surviving. I wouldn't say thriving, but we're still alive.
Weekend was a little rough.
All our ribs are fine. We can't speak too much to TCU's quarterback. But yeah, we wanted to get an offensive lineman on because we all see that that has been the most disappointing part of the team so far this year, to say the least. And we want to get your thoughts on it. If you see any kind of positives, any obviously plenty of teaching moments, but anything your takeaway after a quarter of the season, or I guess a third of the season this year.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of interesting. I mean there's definitely been some reason for concern. You can't ignore that. Part of that could be, just with the craziness of everything that's going on in the world, and that's definitely gonna factor into the mental aspect of everything. But yeah, there's definitely been some correctable opportunities. When I was there, Coach Williamson was our offensive line coach, and after every game, he'd say, "Well, guys, you played well, but no reason to cancel practice." So they definitely have not had any reasons to cancel practice. But there's been some things. They've done some good things, so I don't want to tear them down too much. But yeah, there's definitely some opportunities to grow a little bit. That's for sure.
If you were the offensive line coach, and today was the first practice after a game like Saturday, what would you be doing with the team?
I would be wondering if anybody had developed one of those Men in Black mind eraser things, because that's that's something we definitely need to forget. It was a tough Saturday, that's for sure. Mainly in that first three quarters, they didn't look good as a whole. They had some issues gelling from an offensive line standpoint. They just weren't getting any push. And this isn't anything that they wouldn't say so themselves. And I saw they had a couple guys coming out. They're just struggling to work together as a unit. And that happens. We've had some turnover there. Got some guys either in and out, transferring in and out, or leaving for graduation and all that stuff. So it's always going to be difficult because it's one of the only positions where you're going to have five different people having to work together at one time. So it's definitely I don't know if it's forgivable, but you can understand why there's some issues there.
Well, Jeff, you mentioned them gelling, them needing to work as a unit. Is that the sort of thing that you have to just let them bake in the oven for a while? You have to have time, or is there any way that you can accelerate that process?
Yeah, it definitely comes with traditional, two-a-days and all that stuff. That's where you really kind of build that camaraderie, so to speak. I don't exactly know what their off-season, looked like, truth be told. So I don't know if they had that opportunity. But, when you kind of get into it, when you're there, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, and you're not leaving until 7, 8 o'clock at night, you really get a feel for what the guys next to you are doing and how they're thinking. So if you know how, if I'm the left tackle, if I knew how the guard is going to react to this certain look, that can help me adjust, as the play progresses, as well as understand what the quarterback's looking at. Max is a younger dude. He's obviously, paid his dues, and he's been there for a while now. But you learn what the quarterback sees and how, they're going to check out of certain plays, or if they've got a run-pass option. Having an idea of what that's going to look like before it happens is really, really important. So I think it's probably coming down to with the practice, ahead of the season. And there's no way you can prepare for that by any stretch of the imagination.
Go ahead, man.
Well, it's been obviously a very unusual offseason on a billion different fronts, it feels like. So like you said, there's some forgivable parts on all this. It just feels like this line is better equipped to run block than it is to pass block. Can you explain how different that is, like mentally, like per each play? You have to do in each assignment, everything else like that. Is it really tough to make that big of a difference? That's a really bad job of asking the question. But like, how hard is it to pass block versus run block, and why is it such a disconnect between the two for this team?
Well, it's not a bad question by any means. It really comes doing for a long time. But when you touched on, you know, they did look pretty well running the ball. One thing I noticed was these guys, they look bigger. And I think part of that is just, you know, being the new age kid, they're carrying weight differently than what it was when I was playing. You know, we had a lot of guys that were, you know, 280, 290, 300. Very few guys, you know, were tipping the scales at over 300. You know, obviously we had, you know, Marcus Cannon and Marshall Newhouse, and those guys were bigger dudes, but they've always been, you know, high class, athletic guys. Like, they can move around and they're fast. And, you know, we were always known for being pretty big, but we were fast and we were athletic and just being angry maulers and, you know, like I said, imposing your will a little bit, be that in the pass blocking or the run blocking. So it's just, you know, just kind of adjusting to, you know, trying to be that angry SOB, in the passing game.
You know, I think when you look at the Texas game, you look at the last half of Iowa State, it's almost like a completely different offense than the one we saw against Kansas State last Saturday and the first half against Iowa State. How much of the struggles that we saw last week, how much of that do you think could be mitigated by changes in play calling maybe? Or why do you think there was almost like such a Jekyll and Hyde between these first three games?
How much harder is it to run kind of like the 2 minute or 4 minute offense as a big body guy versus the rest of the time? Because it feels like Clint just referred to, when they're back against the wall, Max has like one or two reads, boom, 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 they're going forward. Can the offensive line like keep up for a whole game at that tempo? Or is that too difficult to put on these big bodies?
but it's tough, but that's where, you know, you really get into the mental side of it. So when you get tired, making sure your foot placement is where it was when you started the drive or started the first quarter, and making sure you're putting yourself in a position, be that, you know, with your foot placement or using your hips or using your hands, making sure that's consistent across all the plays, all the quarters. But as you're going up and down the field, yeah, it's tough. I mean, you're huffing and puffing, but oftentimes, you know, as you're dictating that tempo, you make it more difficult for the defensive line to you know, rotate in and out. So they're getting just as tired as you are. The only difference is you know the snap count and you know where the ball's going. So being able to, you know, to dictate that tempo and, again, making sure you're getting positive yardage is key for these guys.
You started your senior year, you started all 13 games at left tackle. Is there a guy that you're watching on this roster that you like a lot that you've seen play some this year? I'm trying to put a positive spin on this. Someone that's really shining in your opinion?
I mean, I won't, you know, keep my bias too strong and go with just the offensive line, but I love watching Garrett Wallow play, man. That guy is just he's just a such a great player. You can see he's one of those. He's the prototypical, you know, GP guy that's undersized, but he's going to go out and he's going to ball. And one thing I noticed when we were playing Texas is he had, you know, one or two plays in a row where it may not have been his direct responsibility to make a play, but he missed on a play, and that led to some big gains. And then down on the 1 yard line, he comes in and you know strips the ball, and we end up winning the game. So having more guys like that with that mindset of okay, I may have screwed up on a couple plays, but when it comes down to the real plays, being able to make an impact on the game. And obviously there's guys, you know, like Max and Barlow and all those guys running the ball with the ball in their hands. They can do some special things. You got a lot of speed, which is really, really important and bodes well for the future. But we just got to have more guys that just try and make those big plays after making a bad play, because bad plays are going to happen. And anybody who says that they're not going to make a bad play is a liar. But just being able to adjust and make up for it down the line, having guys like that in those key positions, like linebacker, are great people to have.
Is it easier for you to watch an appreciated defensive player now that you're not playing, or like do you have more kind of pressure, if you will, watching the offense, or more anxiety is a better way to put it, watching the offense versus watching the defense right now?
Man, that doesn't matter who it is. I'm going to be riddled with anxiety no matter what. Understanding, you know, the defense that Coach Patterson runs and seeing it, you know, when you're in pads and with your helmet on and seeing it, you know, face up versus watching that kind of, you know, from the stands view or from the camera view, it's not any more difficult. It's just you try and look and appreciate different things and appreciate different looks, and you get to see why Coach Patterson is as respected as he is around the coaching community. What he's able to do with that 4-2-5 and with the defense being so unique and people trying to copy it, and frankly they fail just because they're not as good at, you know, evaluating those players that can come into the system and run the 4-2-5 the way that he does. But man, it's just, you know, watching it as a fan, it's just so cool. You know, playing is great. You know, in college it's awesome. It's an experience, you know, unlike anything else. But then when you sit back and, you know, when you come back, you know, the year after you graduate, or a couple years after you graduate, you get to go tailgate and see all your buddies and start drinking beers at 9 o'clock for an 11 o'clock kickoff. Like, man, I missed all this during college, but it's pretty cool. I still enjoy it. You know, I've through all of this, you know, craziness, I actually found myself watching a lot less sports. But I mean, every Saturday I'm glued into what the Frogs are doing. I'm going to be watching, you know, every play as if I was still playing.
Are you going to, like, speaking of kind of not watching games as much, have you made it out to the card yet? Will you at some point this season, given everything going on in the world?
Man, I haven't. I didn't get to go last year, just with, you know, scheduling stuff. And I've got two little girls, and of course my youngest, she was born, at 6:53 before kickoff of the Ohio State game. And I grew up in Ohio, and my entire family is Buckeyes fans, and I hate Ohio State. Hate them. And so my parents were in town. They went down to the game, and of course, the one game I've been looking forward to, and I told the story on Twitter a while back. You know, when I went in one of my unofficial visits at TCU. My mom brought up, you know, that we were Buckeyes fans, and Coach Patterson said, he's like, we've been trying to get a game with Ohio State for a long time, and it's being able to see that, and of course, like, after my wife gave birth, I mean, she's you know, a sweetheart, she was like, you can turn on the game on your phone, and I was like, no, it's okay, so I finally, you know, looked at the score, and we're winning, and I was like, okay, let's get up, and then obviously, you know, things transpired as they did, and, you know, nothing could have knocked me off my high after, you know, holding my little girl that day, but it's all good. So I'm hoping to get out there maybe sometime this year. but definitely next year for sure.
Jeff, I know you don't have a lot more time left to talk. We really do appreciate you jumping on, but I wanted to give you a heads up because it just occurred to me. This summer, we went through a list of the greatest TCU athletes to wear every single jersey number, and you were our 62, man. So congratulations on that. How do you feel about being the best 62 in TCU history?
Man, it's great. I mean, we've had a lot of good dudes come through the years rocking the 62s. But I saw that and I couldn't help but smile, man. It's just, you know, being in those, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, you don't get a whole lot of shine. So it was cool to get out there, and I sent that. There's a guy, you know, a guy came before me, you know, Joe Briggs, works for the NFLPA, and so I sent that to him, and he wasn't too happy. He thought he should have been considered for that. But it's great. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, from some guy who played, you know, tight end, H-back in high school, who made his name talking in 140 characters or less. It's a real honor. I can't wait for the trophy to show up.
Well, it'll be in the mail, Jeff. We really appreciate your time. And again, do you have something you want to promote right now besides your elite Twitter account?
Man, I got nothing to provide. I mean, nobody should follow me. I'm not that funny. It's all just stream of consciousness. My wife finally realized that, you know, she typically ignores me around the house. She's like, this is why you do it. And so you have a voice. And
awesome, Jeff. We appreciate your time. We'll definitely reconnect soon, all right?
Absolutely. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, Jeff. You too, man.
Jeff Olson. Like we said, elite Twitter account. I don't think he actually said what it is. At JOlson62, AOLSON on Twitter. But yeah, Jeff's obviously a great guy. Odds are, if you listen to this, you follow him on Twitter already.
Yeah, probably. I think he's the only blue check mark at this table, right? Am I mistaken
on
that?
Yeah. I have not gotten there yet, I don't think.
I'm not even close. So.
Well, someday we'll all aspire to be on Jeff's level.
Yeah.
But yes, thank him for his time and helping explain kind of a little bit about the offensive line for us that are just like, oh, they're terrible. But there is a little more to it than just like, oh, they're terrible. They're obviously trying. It's not like they're...
Well, yeah, I would hope so. Like,
yeah, but some of the plays you wonder.
Yeah.
but there is a lot going on this season. But I do think this bye week is coming at a pretty good time as they can hopefully right that ship a little bit and get that unit working a little bit better.
Yeah, man, because Lord knows. I mean, you know, you can try and point your fingers in 100 different directions. A lot of people want to talk about play calling, which I think by and large has been much, just infinitely better this year. Really, when you look at that Kansas State game specifically, the defense played lights out across the board. It all comes down to that offensive line and to Max just getting obliterated on so many plays. It was tough to watch at times.
The defense allowed 289 yards, and obviously 80 of them came on one play. But even on that drive, the defense held them to a field goal. The defense allowed just one touchdown, and I haven't seen the stat or know how to look this up. But in a Big 12 game where the defense allows just one touchdown, like, what's your record?
You got to win that game.
You have to win that game.
You have to.
If the defense allows one touchdown and two field goals, you win that game, I'm assuming 99% of the time. And this offense just wasn't good enough. Max was running for his life the entire game and sometimes not be able to get away. He had to leave for a drive and a half, or was it two drives he was out for?
Yeah, like a drive and a half, I think.
And Downing obviously threw a pick six on that possession. So this all has to be on the offense, and we like what we see when this team runs the ball, just a lot less when they try to pass block.
Yeah, and I think I will, since we're not beholden to a particular website anymore, I will go ahead and plug Frogs of War wrote a fantastic article that you should go check out about the offensive line and the offensive line struggles. And there was one specific quote that I wanted to pull out of it that I was just, my jaw hit the floor. I'm not here to call for anybody's jobs. I've decided I shouldn't do that anymore. It's a bad thing to do. But this is shocking when you consider a pattern. That the article said, Jared Anderson is the offensive line coach again for the first time since 2016, a season during which TCU allowed 31 sacks on Kenny Hill. Kenny Hill, a mobile quarterback. Yeah. Got sacked 31 times in 2016. We've already allowed, you know how many sacks we've allowed this year, Billy?
I know because you told me.
Because I told you, yes. Yeah. We've allowed 10 sacks in three games this year.
So it's on pace. We're on pace
to eclipse that in nine games. Not even a full game. I mean, this is, like we said, run blocking, not so much of an issue. We've looked good in run blocking. It's a lot easier, too, to be like, that's your man, go get him, you know? But pass blocking, when communication is so key and preparation is so key, we are struggling mightily. And it's something that absolutely, it has to get fixed, not only if you want to win games, but if you want to keep Max upright and alive for that 2021 campaign we keep talking about.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, is keeping him healthy at this point. Because I think a healthy Max, I made the case last week, he's the best quarterback in the Big 12. I think he's still in that contention, even though things weren't really looking good this weekend. But
well, he's dang sure the toughest quarterback in the Big 12.
He's a warrior. Yes. He's a warrior, as everyone says. And it just stinks to watch him limp off the field. And, I mean, I asked Austin Myers after the game about that, because Austin Myers was willing to take questions and stuff. And
Which, by the way, he deserves some huge props
for that. Oh, for sure. Again, he's the senior. He's, I think, the most veteran among the starters in the O-line. And I asked him about Max getting banged up, and he goes, "It hurts him too." And I think it hurts Max more, but they know they need to be better. And I think this bye week is coming at a good time. A, get Max fully healthy for Oklahoma, and also get this offensive line a little more time to gel, communicate, and get their act together.
Yeah, and you know, I have hemmed and hawed about Texas football calling our line a D-plus line. I still think that's ridiculous. These are talented guys. They are. They are putting forth D-plus effort, certainly.
D-plus stats right now.
D-plus stats. I would even go as far as to say F stats on Saturday. But, you know, hey, like Jeff was saying, men in black, flashy thing. Let's forget about that. They've got to get – they're capable of being better. They are capable of it. They've got to get better. Yep. And you hope – I mean, you know, you hope that Andrew Coker's not going to be out too long. I mean, he is, yeah, one of the younger guys on that line, but an extremely talented member of that line. You hope not to have too much drop-off with Coy McMillan in there instead of Esteban Avila. But,
well, Coy started every game last year. That shouldn't be that major of a drop-off.
Sure.
But yeah, hopefully Coker comes back because, again, I've been clamoring for him for 2 years now, thinking he's going to be amazing. And he was great last year. Hasn't quite been as good this year, but I think they've moved him around at both tackle spots already some this year because they can't find an answer at left tackle yet.
Yeah.
It hasn't really been Myers. It hasn't been Stormont. It hasn't been Coker yet.
Was Lucas Niang a left tackle or a right tackle? I think it was a left tackle.
He was right, I'm pretty sure.
Well, yeah.
Either way.
He's your last really consistent, really solid tackle.
But the thing is, and I talked to Olfin and Chris Gardner last night. Saints play, it's obviously we talked. But the O-line came up, and he was mentioning, like kind of like Olsen said, Jeff Olsen said, that this they recruited guys differently back then than they do now. He was coming how much tougher they were because they were a little bit undersized back then versus now. These are the bigger bodies, but it's just not the same kind of tenacity, if you will.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that's not the sort of thing you can necessarily teach.
Well, you can light a fire under somebody somebody that kind of helps that tenacity.
But you can't teach a chip on the shoulder. You can't teach I got to prove people wrong mentality.
No, you've got to make that happen. And I would just be watching film of Max getting hit. Like, say, hey, here's your motivation.
Yeah, for real.
Max had heart surgery 2 months ago, man. Like,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Like, I guess 3 months ago now. But either way, he just had heart surgery. And he's out here and you're risking him and the future of this whole program, essentially, because you're not playing well enough.
Well, in the spirit of positivity, we should talk more about just how fantastic the defense was. And specifically, I would say, just how great Josh Foster was coming in. Came in off the bench, didn't skip a beat.
Ardarius Washington, of course, had the targeting call in the second quarter.
I would go as far as to say a garbage targeting call.
I thought it was a fair targeting call.
See, okay.
Targeting is so subjective.
Me and my friends were quite split over this as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of my friends was saying, by the letter of the law, yes, he made forcible contact to the head or neck area. But if you ask me, that's as clean of a hit. As he wasn't leading with his head. He didn't launch himself. He just put himself into his shoulder. And, you know, I think it's kind of like that Jeff Gladney hit last year where it's like, it looked so violent on the receiving end that you throw the reactionary flag as a ref.
But then you review it. It's not just reactionary. You have to sit there and review it, and they upheld it, and he got ejected. Of course, it was in the first half, so he'll be back for the Oklahoma game, which helps. But, yeah, Josh Foster looked good. I know Daniels continues to impress.
Oh, my gosh,
Trey Tomlinson's good. Again, this is against a true freshman quarterback and not the pass-happiest of offenses anyway. But the secondary looked good. The linebackers looked good. Defensive line still not – 100% there, but you saw back-to-back plays. Oshon Mathis and Corey Bethley got sacks. So, yeah,
and Kari Coleman looked good again.
Kari Coleman looked good again. So the defense is coming together. Like, we knew it would. It wasn't, yes. Wasn't that worried about that.
Listen, anybody who is holding Deuce Vaughn to less than 100 total yards, that is A, an accomplishment, and then B, a team that should be winning that freaking game.
There's only one team that's done that. So,
yep.
So it is what it is. But yeah, we have no reason. We have nothing else to hope except that it gets better.
Sure.
After this bye week. So, you talk about football anymore, or are you done with football for now?
Well, I guess we have to be done because now we got 2 weeks to wait until Oklahoma comes.
Yeah, no prediction for that game yet. We'll have to wait. We'll make that next week. So we made y'all wait long enough to talk about the whole. Clearly, this is not the aforementioned Purple Windows podcast anymore. My contract ended with Rivals, so I am no longer associated with them or beholden to them. So this is
Hoovels?
Right now. Do what?
Hoovels?
Hoovels? Be beholden? I don't know. I don't know what the word is. But either way,
I'm just not familiar with these Rivals that you're speaking.
Well, yeah, but it's so.
I would hope you're not familiar with. You're not associated with Baylor or SMU or Texas.
No. But this is just. It was a rough week last week when I found that out. But it is what it is. Going forward, I've got a pretty good opportunity. I think starting in the next week or two, that'll be really good. We're not talking about it yet. But it should be going forward. Expect the same fun TCU content you've been getting for the last, I guess, 7 years. So,
yeah, so, more to come.
So, yes. But also, if you have any full-time jobs that you're looking to fill, let me know. DMs are open. So,
how adventurous are you willing to get with your next career?
Pretty adventurous. I haven't worked in 8 months. The only time I've put on pants is to go to Amon G. Carter Stadium a couple times. So, I'll take what I can get at this point. We'll see how this goes. But yeah, so that's kind of the long and short of it.
What's the weirdest job you would do? I really want to unpack this.
Well, I was a repo man for one day once.
Oh, really? How'd that go?
Kind of. It's kind of a long story. Well, it's not really a long story. It's a weird story. So my grandparents owned houses. And like if people wouldn't pay rent in time, uh-huh. You had to go and like take stuff to
sure.
Basically force them to pay rent. So basically one day when I was in high school, maybe earlier than that, basically it was like, hey, go to these houses and like take stuff. I was like, so I'm sure that's not, I'm sure
go legally rob
yeah,
these
I'm
people.
Sure, I'm sure that's not, that wasn't like a positive way of going about it, but I did it for a day and it was kind of terrifying because I guess I have the key. I'm in their house. They could show up at any time. And
oh, they weren't there.
No. Oh. This is backwoods Louisiana. Like you just show up and take stuff, whatever you kind of want to grab. And you get a couple handfuls of things and go on to the next one. So that's been the weirdest job I've done. I would say to this point. So I would not like to do that again.
Yeah, but you have experience on your.
I have experience. It's on the resume,
like on the Sims, right? One of the first jobs you can get, I think, is being a criminal. So it's like you can have your resume like previous. Thievery, legal thievery.
That
experience.
Goes on your resume as on The Sims. I've never played
I don't,
The Sims.
It's been years since I played okay. The Sims, but I remember that was like when you're looking for a job, the first one that you can get is like criminal. Like,
normally, that keeps you from getting other jobs yeah. in the real world. That normally takes you out of a lot of pools. And there's I don't have a criminal record. I got like 3 speeding tickets, and that's all to my name. In case you need to know that,
yes.
for
yes.
future reference.
Speak multiple languages or
un poquito español.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
so Billy is bilingual.
Yeah, put on the resume. And I'll trilingual. I'll try to speak French. Like I can throw another one in there. But back to TCU sports.
Yeah, let's
that's
get
really
back
okay.
to our topic.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about my resume anymore. All the lies that are on there. Let's go to the next thing I have written down here is some mock drafts involving Desmond Bane. With obviously NBA season wrapping up, congrats LeBron James. Again, you can argue his greatness. We've done it before. But yeah.
Where's Lee Nalen when you need
yeah,
him?
Yeah, right. Congrats on his fourth title. But Desmond Bane, according to one site, sure, I wrote Packers down as his destination instead of Lakers down. But one site, tankathon.com, has him going 28th overall to the Lakers, not the Packers, as I wrote here in my notes.
He could play receiver.
Sure, why not? Yeah. They need receivers.
Yeah.
Also, having going 24th to the Bucks, that'd be really interesting with Giannis and Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
And then 23rd to the Jazz, according to NBADraftRoom.com and Uproxx.com for those last two. I couldn't find like the composite thing like I found a few weeks ago. So hopefully I can find one of those. And the draft, I think, is next month. I think it's mid-November. So.
Yeah. And I like seeing, I mean, we've been monitoring these mock drafts for a number of months now, and it – He seems to be a pretty consensus first round.
Pretty
pick
consensus
at this point.
Late first rounder. ESPN had him as 41 on their big board. So odds are he'll get his name called. He'll be the first TCU player to get drafted since Lee Nayland. So it'll be an exciting time for TCU when that occurs.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
It's also an exciting time for a different TCU sports team, women's soccer.
Yeah, who said TCU football had a bad week?
Right, TCU women's football is up to number 6 in the country.
Man,
6. That poll came out a couple hours ago, so in case you haven't seen that yet, they beat number 4 Oklahoma State on the road in overtime last weekend. I watched the highlights, and I was just getting excited watching the highlights for this team. Maddie Warren scored the game-tying goal to force overtime with 4 minutes left as she deflected the shot from Grace Collins at the top of the box. Looked a lot like a hockey goal where like Collins was getting tied up with the defender in the goalie box, if you will, and kind of went off her leg and into the goal. You see that a lot in hockey. So really cool to see them force overtime again with 4 minutes left. They were down 1-0 pretty much the whole second half. I think Oklahoma scored with like 33 minutes or so into the game. And then Brandi Peterson, a defender, scored the walk-off just 30 seconds into overtime. Mm. And she kind of took the ball up the middle, and I call it a worm burner, a ball that just is hard struck along the ground. Goalie dove, couldn't get it. She was named the Defensive Player of the Week for her efforts as TCU turned away 18 Oklahoma State shots in the victory.
Man, awesome. Man, this team is for real, man. And fun, man. Like, it's time to get invested in TCU women's soccer if you're not already.
For real.
This is the time to jump on the bandwagon.
They host Texas Tech at 7 p.m. Friday. Texas Tech is 0-2-2 on the season. It is a shame that, once again, TCU women's sport has no shot of playing for a national title this year.
Yes.
Like, because like the basketball team got hosed because they would have been in the tournament for sure. And then the soccer team would make the tournament again for sure. But now would be like an Elite Eight caliber team. And I noticed Eric Bell's former team, Florida State, is sitting there number 2 in the polls. It would have been fun to watch them go up against each other, possibly in the Final Four, if you will.
Yeah. I don't guess there's any way that could possibly get rescheduled, could it?
I mean, probably not. But I think it was a lot. I don't think they would do that for soccer. Again, as terrible as that sounds, basketball, maybe.
Yeah.
Soccer, I don't think it's going to happen. Mm. So, but they could go win a Big 12 title.
Dang.
So they can go win that this year. Because I think they're still playing the Big 12 tournament, I believe.
I think you're right, yeah.
I believe that's still on schedule. So let me pull up their schedule just to make sure on that one. But I'm pretty sure they can still play for a Big 12 championship, wherever that is. The schedule ends, according to GoFrogs.com, with a West Virginia game on November 6th. I just don't know if it's not updated or what or how that works. But go win the regular season title.
Yeah, if nothing else, you have a chance to win the regular season title.
You have 5 games left. You have, like I said, West Virginia's ranked. Kansas is ranked. They're both in the top 10 as well. So it's not going to be easy to go run the table, but they possibly can. If they win against the number 4 team in the country on the road, they can beat anybody.
Yeah, you'd think so, man.
So
you'd think so.
And then the volleyball team got their first win of the season in their first match at Schollmeyer, beat Texas Tech 3-2 in a 5-set thriller. Julia Adams and Afedo Manning each had 24 kills, and Mackenzie Nichols had 64 assists. So they're now 1-3 on the season. They play West Virginia on the road this weekend, 6 o'clock Thursday on ESPNU and 5 p.m. Friday on ESPN+.
Tune in. Watch your girl frogs.
Watch your lady frogs, man. They're getting some wins. And again, you don't have any football to watch this weekend. So watch some football and some volleyball while you're at it.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, and you could also watch my latest YouTube video and wallow in the Kansas State mystery
right
along with it.
You can do that for sure. Definitely give that a check out.
You got an extra week.
of what you could do a Big 12 reaction if you want to.
I'm planning on another. A new Zoom concept call. That I'm going to try. Not a Zoom call, but kind of in a similar spirit to the Big 12 Zoom call. I want to try it out, maybe get that done this weekend. So
right.
Something different.
In bye weeks. But changes for all of us, all
yes.
around.
Yes.
Plenty of good stuff going on. Speaking of changes, time for some Twitter questions.
Oh, before though,
okay.
before we get into
we can take some time.
We should revel in, well, not revel, I mean, because... Prayers up for Dak. Brutal injury. Oh, my gosh. And, like, you got to love the way that dude just literally leaves it all out on the field for his team. And clearly such an invested guy, such a good guy. But can we take a moment to revel in the fact that Andy Dalton is the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys? And I hate the way it happened, but I have never been so happy.
Yeah, definitely a difference. I don't know. I hope Andy does really well, obviously. I kind of think this will make Cowboys fans... like a lot of hate on.
Oh, he'll get an outsized amount of criticism, no doubt. But he won the problem in Cincinnati. I mean,
well, no, I think this will make fans miss Dak a little bit more because I think Andy will be good, but Andy's more of a gunslinger. He's closer to Tony Romo than Dak was.
Yeah,
as far as like he'll throw a pick here and there.
Yeah,
if you saw it, of course he didn't have any talent in Cincinnati around him.
That's what I was gonna say too. Suddenly he's surrounded by an amazing, or at least an offense with amazing potential.
Well, he's got like three of the best receivers in football.
Yeah,
but also offensive line struggles. So, yes. So we'll see how that goes. But no, I'm excited for Andy Dalton. I'm bummed out about my my previously 4-0 fantasy team that was led by Dak Prescott. Mm. But I think he'll heal up. But Andy, this is a shot, man. This is a shot he can
He's not throwing away.
If he goes and rattles off. I don't know. I haven't looked at the Cowboys' schedule, but they play in the NFC. So they win the division, which they should, and rattle off some wins here. Could lead to a bigger payday going forward somewhere else. So,
man, hey. If the defense can stop literally anybody and the Cowboys' trajectory improves and Andy goes far, that would be just very fun for me. Very, very fun. That's all I can say.
So we're all rooting for Andy Dalton here, obviously. And obviously, we also hope that Dak Prescott gets healed soon.
Yes, definitely.
Every timetable says 4 to 6 months. And that I bet 6 is very optimistic for that, as bad as that looked.
Oh, my God. I would think at least a year, if not two,
well,
before he's playing again.
Apparently, Kenyon Drake suffered a very similar injury in college.
Oh, really?
And he missed just a year. So I think it's possible that he's back by training camp next year. Hmm. It's still 10 months away from training camp.
Yeah.
So it's not impossible to think he will be back at some point next. Like, the biggest thing between him and Alex Smith was Alex Smith was infected.
Oh,
had to
right.
amputate it.
True.
Like, that's why he missed so much time. Dak, they got to it quick. He didn't get infected. Had successful surgery immediately. So it's really about just kind of setting and then rehabbing it for months and months and months. Yeah. So
man, he's got a long road ahead.
Long road ahead for sure. But
I will say, though, too, you mentioned the offensive line struggles. I literally turn on the Cowboys game, and the first play I see is Andy getting sacked by an unabated defensive lineman. So I had to tweet. I was like, is there no escape from this waking nightmare?
Yeah, right.
Everywhere I look, a TCU quarterback is getting obliterated by someone. What is happening to me?
Yep. Yeah, not a Cowboys fan. My Saints barely pulled out a squeaker last night, and their O line is fine. Just I have a billion year old quarterback back there. So
Methuselah Breeze.
I sometimes like, man, I want to see Jameis Winston out there.
You're ready to go for Jameis?
Well, he can throw the ball more than 10 yards down the field. Of course, Drew finally threw a pass deep in the 10 yards, and it was a 40-yard touchdown. So he can do it. I just like to see it more often.
Yeah.
So it can't just be all screen pass to Kamara and then make him make five guys miss every play. As much fun as that is to watch.
Yeah.
Any more Cowboys? Any more?
We can
talk about whatever we want. Really, we're not just a whatever podcast we were before. We're unaffiliated now.
Hey, we are free. Free as a
free
bird.
Falling.
Free falling.
All right, Bayou City.
No, we've stopped that. We got the parachute.
Yeah, I know. Bayou City Frog. I feel like all our collective frustrations are not actually about the first three games, rather the cumulative effect of the previous seasons.
I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans like, look what we've done the last couple years. I haven't been relevant in 3 years. And I think this team has a chance, a really good shot at being relevant starting next week if they can get their act together on the O-line and go put a full 60 minutes together.
Yeah, really. I mean, as bleak as it looks after this last win, we were talking about it last week. We think it's extremely likely that at least one of the teams in the Big 12 title game has three losses. I mean, that is still very much in play. So, you know, if we see the TCU versus Texas more frequently than we see the TCU versus Kansas State, you know, that opportunity is still there. And I still, even with the issues that we saw on Saturday, I still feel very good about our chances against Oklahoma in 2 weeks. I felt that way since before the season. I really, 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 and especially after Red River. I mean, my gosh, Oklahoma has some problems, man.
Oh yeah,
they have some problems.
No.
So I feel very good about that game still. And you want to know what? You want to know what'll suddenly have people feeling a lot better about this season is if you get a win against Oklahoma.
That'll be the totally. We were debating in the press box the other day who's having the weirdest season in college football. Like Kansas State's potentially up there. Arkansas State's up there. Arkansas themselves are up there.
Well, LSU is weird for LSU.
Yeah, their first team was all in the NFL. Their second team was all sitting out to go to the NFL next year.
Yeah,
I didn't think it'd be that bad.
Yeah,
but it is. And Sean Robinson got benched at Missouri, by the way. So we're also debating how many would he play at more colleges or high schools in his career.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
Where's he going next?
Yep. In isolation, if you take in all the changes and COVID impacts going into the season, being only three games in, losing a couple close ones is not bad, but it's the fact that you've had three or four of your last four seasons be 500, and during that time you've recruited better than 70% of your conference. What do you think? Yeah, I think it's the whole. It's we're all bummed. Like, if last year this team, if we had an LSU year last year,
mm-hmm.
we would not care right now.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd be like, all right, well, this sucks, but we understand.
Yeah, Bayou City is 1,000,000% correct. And, you know, he mentioned the one-score losses. I think that's wearing on everybody's nerves, too. Every single loss last year, except for Iowa State, was a one-score loss. And we're doing the same daggum thing again. You know, like, it's tiresome because you're like, oh, my gosh, every single one of these games is winnable, and we're not doing it. You know, like, yeah. What is happening? That's there's no doubt that's where the frustration is coming from.
Yep. Again, I heard Marcel Brooks was struggling with grasping the defense, given that Chris Gardner said about a linebacker. Wouldn't that be the better spot for him and giving him another year or two? Do we think that off the field stuff will prevent that? So, did you see Marcel Brooks's Instagram story yesterday? Had people freaking out?
I did not. And I didn't know if he was injured and that's why we weren't seeing him against Kansas State. I don't know. So, please enlighten
me. Well, he was on the field against Kansas State. He wasn't dressed. So, he was there, part of the program. And then yesterday on Instagram, he was talking about it's more than X's and O's. And it's more than just football. And a lot of people were freaking out saying they think he's quitting. He never once said that or really hinted at it. And so, not sure of his state yesterday as well. So who knows? But yeah, I mean, I would like to see him at linebacker because, as Chris says, is the easiest spot in the field to learn.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be easier for him to adjust to. I think maybe they're throwing too much at him because they expect too much out of him as well. Also, but first and foremost, he's got to get healthy. I think if he gets healthy, and if they decide to focus on just one thing for him, then maybe it gets a little bit easier, a little bit better, and we see more of Agent Zero. So
okay, yeah, I mean, I was ignorant of all of that.
So. Yeah, I mean, but it was a lot of people yesterday on Twitter were confused by his Instagram story. So mm-hmm. there we go. I'm sure they were on Instagram as well. Whatever. Given what you've seen through three games, gut feeling, how do you see the rest of the season going, and what do you think that will mean for the off season?
You want to take this one first?
Oh, thank you. My phone that's ringing because it's another call from an unknown number because I get seven of those a day. Yeah, how do I see the rest of the season going? Let me pull up the schedule. Versus Oklahoma, I mean, I'll say loss because we won't be favored in that game. At Baylor, I'm going to say win.
We'll be big.
I'll never say Baylor's going to win, going to beat them anyway.
If Baylor even has enough healthy
Baylor, yeah, that they we'll see how this is going. Again, it's 2.5 weeks from now, so ideally they'll all be COVID-free by then. But yeah, Baylor had a massive outbreak. Maybe they should be taking this thing seriously.
Yeah, you know, as much as they like covering things up, right, you'd think that they wouldn't be so hurt about wearing a mask.
And, of course, they blame their trip to Morgantown as the reason for that, so they're blaming other people.
Yeah.
You know, Baylor going to Baylor.
Yeah.
So the
thriving metropolis of Morgantown, which is just
just trailer park after trailer park, burning couch.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say Oklahoma. I say they beat Baylor. So what does that put them at? Two and three.
Yes, that'd be 2-3.
2-3 versus Tech. I think they'll beat Tech. That's also a dumpster fire. 3-3 at West Virginia. I'll say L there because they have a good defensive line. They'll tough to go play there.
Yeah.
3-4 at Kansas. I hope they beat Kansas after a bye week, no less. I'll say 4-4. And then Oklahoma State, I'll say L because I think Oklahoma State's really good. So let's call it 4-5. Does that get you into the fourth bowl? Because this year, anyone go to any bowl game, and we'll see if they do take some local-ish teams, and maybe you have a TCU-SMU first responders bowl and at the Cotton Bowl or whatever the Armed Forces Bowl is now or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'll say 4-5 and maybe get to a bowl game this year. Who knows?
I'm going to say 5-4 because I'm with you. I do not feel good at all about that West Virginia game. I think Oklahoma State's the better team than us. But I think we pull that upset against Oklahoma. I think we stun Oklahoma. So I think we win the next three and everyone's like, oh my God. Everyone gets super, super excited. We go to West Virginia. We get, brought back down to earth again, and then, you know, finish out the season with a win and a loss. So, but still, 5-4, winning record with everything that's transpired this year and the issues that we've seen. I think that's good. I'd be happy with that. And you feel like that's a pretty good building block for that next year that we've all got our fingers crossed about. We've all got our eyes on, mm-hmm. right?
And then, what does that mean for the offseason? I think if you're average, maybe that leads to less changes. Maybe you want to be a little bit worse and see some more changes.
Yeah, if you actually want some changes to happen, yeah, we probably do need to lose a few more.
So I am hoping 4-5 is enough to be like, let's make some kind of change in here.
Yeah.
Why has slow starts been such a problem over the last few years? This year they've been talking about energy, but I can't really – I don't know if that's been an issue in years past. It just seems like – that's what it is. They start off just so slow. Well, really, that's not even necessarily true. This game, they had the opening drive for a touchdown. Darnell Barlow scored.
Yeah.
And then kind of a lull after that. When they have their script, their first 5 to 10 plays, whatever everyone already has scripted, seem to go much better. And then you go off book and things seem to fall apart a little bit.
That's a good point. The whole energy thing doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I get that it's weird because of how few people there are in the stands. But... you know, everyone always talks about blocking out the stands anyway, right? When you're out there playing, like, you just block out all the noise and you're focusing on your assignment. Like, that shouldn't be a factor, as far as I'm concerned. But, yeah, I don't think it's looked like we've had especially slow starts. I mean, we've dug ourselves into holes, but not because we've come out with low energy. Which, by the way, we didn't even talk about this. What was going on with our clock management in the fourth quarter of that Kansas State game?
And we were talking about in the press box too. I kind of get it when you give up 9 yards on that first down. That's like the worst possible scenario. You'd rather them just go ahead and get the first down because you want to start using your time.
I'm not talking about when we were on defense. I'm talking about when we scored our second touchdown. When it felt like it took us an eternity. We were taking so long to snap the ball, so long to get to the ball.
Yeah,
but letting clock bleed. Well, it's like you've got 2 scores to make up, and really, no, you haven't shown any semblance of a 2-minute offense in the last couple of years. So you need time.
Well, you say that, but really, in reality, this team, this offense under Max Duggan's looked almost better when you have 2 minutes to just one read go. And I mentioned it to Jeff, it's like you have one read go, you have one read go, and it seems to be. They can pick that up. It seems to be less thinking, less time for pressure to get to you because the O-line gives you 2 seconds to make a play. So it seems they've moved the ball better under the situation.
Yeah,
so.
Move the ball better, but you still don't want to bleed like friggin' a minute and a half or 2 minutes off the clock for no reason.
But
then you're backed up now on your own like 2-yard line with a minute to score to tie. And then, you know, we saw the problems on that drive when it's like, oh, let's... call a draw play on the first.
Yeah, I can get some of it, but yeah, I think a lot of that stemmed from that next drive giving up 9 yards on first down twice. Like if you gave him the first down, I think if they had gotten because it almost was that first play of that next drive for Kansas State, Vaughn got hit in the backfield, but I think twice, and it should have been a 2 or 3 yard loss. And he broke a 10, he broke it off to like be a 9 yard gain.
Oh yeah, it was a sheer miracle that we even had the ball.
Because the dude literally fell down.
Yeah,
if he hadn't fallen down, like they would have just bled the clock and it would have been game over right there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. It's. Clock management late in the fourth quarter is probably near the bottom of the issues right now.
Well, I mean, yeah, overall issues.
Because
it was a big issue with that game.
Well, if you play better for 3.5 quarters, then it won't be in that issue.
Very good point. So, you're not in that position if you play better for the other 3 quarters.
What do we have to do to break the bad mojo that's still from Bayou City? Does GP have to wear a different shirt? Do I have to wear a different shirt? Tell me what I have to do and I will do it. Bayou City, you need to be shirtless and very drunk for every game. I don't care what else you're doing. Shirtless and drunk, you need to be J.R. Smith after winning a title. That's where you need to be mindset-wise. Seriously, though, I'm not saying I'm not frustrated.
I approve this message.
I'm just trying to be grateful that we are in a league playing Power 5 schools that mostly in Texas and Oklahoma, Mountain West Conference isn't playing right now. I think they're going to start playing soon.
Yeah, they are going to have a season after
2 weeks,
all,
I think.
Because whenever the Big Ten decided that they were going to, everyone else was like, well, I guess we should too.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it all works out for them because as you saw, Baylor had an outbreak and they're missing a game here. So I think when these guys get going, it'll be tough to play their full year and try and get in for the playoff. Even though Ohio State, I think, is still the favorite to win the national title now all of a sudden.
It's so dumb.
It is dumb.
I'm just have I can't stand Ohio State and the favoritism. And yeah, let's move on. Next Twitter
question. Well, I don't know what this is from. At W Lee Casey. I mentioned my tweet about the soccer team being number six. And he said, move the ball horizontally, please. Too much run and gun. It will catch up to you with good teams. Dink dunk wide wins championships. I don't know if that's a soccer or a football thing. It's also not really a question. But if that's how you score in soccer, that's fine too. I don't watch a ton of soccer. But if that works for them, and then by all means, I'm going to say keep doing whatever they're doing in soccer.
The, it is working. The podcast formerly known as the Purple Menace Podcast, currently placeholder Toad Talk, is in favor of scoring points.
Yes. Caden in Fort Worth, at Rut Frog, why doesn't TCU ever try to block punts? I think there's too much of a risk for a penalty there. If you watch the Saints game last night, they had a roughing the punter penalty, and that led to a touchdown 3 plays later.
Yeah.
So I think it's at college level. And if you notice, a few years ago, teams missed a lot of field goals against TCU. I don't remember what year it was, but they never rushed. They would kind of just like wave and like jump, and that's all they did. And I feel like kickers miss probably 30% of the field goals, maybe 40% of the field goals
against TCU. Some kind of juju when you're playing against against
the Hypnotoad. Yeah. But I get with these college guys, you're getting the ball back guaranteed if you don't run into the punter.
Yeah.
As undisciplined as they have been at times, I would say just it's not worth the risk unless you're in dire situations.
Well, and we so consistently have such electric return men. Yeah. You'd much rather set up your return man.
Is electric normally. So.
Yeah, you'd much rather set up your return man with blockers than potentially risk roughing the punter and, you know, then he has to fair catch or, you know, get obliterated. And also, I will say, too, Kansas State's punter, he deserves some serious props.
He had a baller game.
He had an amazing game. Yeah. And the
Jordy Sandy wasn't bad either.
Jordy Sandy too. But that Kansas State punter, he was consistently pinning us deep. When he wasn't pinning us deep, he was punting that ball like into the stratosphere. So Kansas State had plenty of time to get their cover guys down to J.D. Spielman and not give him time to return it. That was a clutch performance by the Kansas State punter.
Yeah. Oh, Florida's shutting down their football operations today.
Really?
Yep.
Lose a game and all of a sudden you want to shut it down.
Well, this is also a day after their coach said they want to put 90,000 fans in their stadium for this weekend's game. Just dumb. People are stupid. Matthew at MattG_G_train. What was wrong with the offense Saturday? Offensive line.
Yep. I think it really begins and ends with that.
I think it's simple. It's understated. It is what it is. Barry Barnett at Barnes6719. Why wouldn't TCU play Oklahoma State this week? Then TCU could play SMU on December 5th. That SMU game's not going to happen. I want it to. I just don't see a way that it happens.
Well, I mean, theoretically, it still could.
They're not. Right. And the fact they're putting that Oklahoma State-Baylor game on the 12th now.
Yeah. That's feasible. What makes me think even more it could go there.
You could play. And I did see someone on Facebook, and I looked at my calendar, and it wasn't on there. They said their calendar got auto-updated with the TCU SMU game on December 12th.
Oh.
I saw one person on Facebook say that. I have seen nowhere else say that. So
check your
calendar. I don't know. But it was not on mine. I haven't seen that. I've seen that literally nowhere except for one person on Facebook. So I don't know about that. But
games don't get automatically put on my calendar for some reason. I have to.
Oh, do you have the you don't have the calendar imported from GoFrogs?
No, I don't.
Get your calendar imported from GoFrogs. That will help. One person said it was. I didn't see it on mine, and I've seen no other person say that. So I don't think it's going to happen. But with them moving that game back, that there's a window there to play SMU that last week.
Yeah.
But assuming they're not in the AAC title game, so I don't know if that, I don't know if they're in play for that or not. But we'll see how that goes. But I don't think you want to play Oklahoma State this weekend because I think they want to have that extra flexibility just in case something happens. And I get this weekend would be perfect, but you also have this bye week before Oklahoma and you need this bye week.
Yeah, I was like, you say this weekend would be perfect. Don't put that evil on me, man.
Yeah, I don't.
We do not need Oklahoma State. We need a week to get ready for Oklahoma, man. We do not need the arguably the best team in the conference coming in after that Kansas State game and before Oklahoma. No, sir. No, thank you.
Yeah. Daniel Duncan at D Duncan Soul. Why do we choke in every game that has a reasonable amount of meaning? One back-to-back conference win since 2017. I didn't know that stat, but that is Not good. You've only won back-to-back games once since 2017.
Well, and I saw another stat. I can't remember who shared it. It very well may have been Parker Fleming. Shout out to Parker Fleming. He came and sat with me for a little bit at the game. That was really fun. Meeting him in person for the first time, actually. Oh, wow. Yeah. We were like, is this the first time we've met in person? And like, yeah, I guess we've only ever interacted via Twitter or Skype. Yeah. So, but anyway, what was the question?
Why do we choke in every game that has a reasonable amount of meaning?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the stat was shocking to me that going into that game, TCU, since joining the Big 12, is 5-12, or I guess now 5-13 in games before and after the Texas game. And if you take out 2015 and 2014, that takes it to, 5-12. 1-12. So we do really poorly historically in the games before and after Texas. Huh. And I don't know if that's just because we get on such a high, we get pumped up to play Texas, and you have the letdown afterward. And I mean, surely you're not overlooking the people before, but a very shocking stat to say the least.
Yeah, I didn't realize it's been like that. But yeah,
it might have been Jeff. Jeff Mitchell that shared it. I can't remember. It's going to be too hard for me to go find. But
yeah, but shout out somebody for pulling out that stuff.
Yeah, 5-12 before.
But why did it choke in every game? I don't know. I think follow with the offensive line. I think right now it's about getting the offensive line right, and then hopefully they can rattle off a couple wins with Baylor and Texas Tech. I don't hate starting a winning streak with Oklahoma, Baylor, and Texas Tech.
Yeah, no, so. No, that would be just fine by me.
Don Dowell. Old wisdom used to be offenses with good O-lines could run and pass. Great ones could force their will and get key short yardage. Average to subpar lines could at least sort of pass block with a mobile quarterback. What's going on? We're in that average to subpar right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can run block. They can't pass block right now.
And, you know, Max is mobile, but ideally you don't want him running for his life. He's trying to do what his coaches are telling him to do. Keep your eyes downfield. Be strong in the pocket. And don't run unless you absolutely have to. And you'll notice, too, on a lot of these plays that he's getting hit from his blind side, you know, where he's looking at a receiver, he's looking down where he needs to be, and he just gets, you know,
blindsided.
Yeah, blindsided,
basically.
He gets
smacked.
So, you know, this isn't on Max. It's not on Max.
Well, no, it's on the offensive line, and Don kind of hints at that here. I think they'll get coached up better this weekend. I hope they get coached up better this
weekend.
Yeah, definitely. That's all we can hope for. Brian Banks, here we go. B Banks 2121. Fix our offense in 10 words or less. Offensive line play better. Keep Max Duggan alive and well. There you go.
That's 10 words.
That's exactly 10 words or less. I got 10 words.
Well, less offensive line improve.
There you go. That's like, the least possible one. If TCU finishes 2-7, what are the odds GP cleans house on the coaching staff?
Oh,
his loyalty
zero.
Has to end at some point. At some point, right, he says.
Yeah.
Clean house, I think, is a strong word.
Yeah.
You might see a couple changes if they go 2-7. Hopefully more than a couple.
Coach P has never fired an assistant coach. He's never fired
an assistant. No, he allows people to take other opportunities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I get, you know, there's a lot of positives. People are being very fed up with this aspect about him right now. I think that's a little misguided. I think there's a lot of positive aspects to that because Coach P is a guy who's like, he's like, it took me a long time to get where I am. I was given a lot of second chances. I'm loyal to people. I want to give people second chances. And that's why, you know, he keeps people around. He lets them, you know, his whole thing is like, get better from your mistakes, learn from your mistakes. But yes, I do agree with the sentiment that like, okay, once a pattern has been established, once like it's been a really long time and that growth is not coming. Like, if anything, the responsibility shouldn't be increased.
Yeah.
Right? If anything. So, yeah, ideally some changes occur. What I don't see Coach P being a coach that would ever clean house.
Like, so clean house is strong. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You might see a change or two. 2-7 might force the issue a little bit more, though.
Yeah.
But
hey, let's not hope for that. I really don't want to do that.
I mean, I don't want to root for people to lose jobs, especially.
Yeah.
And
especially right now.
As someone who hasn't worked in 8 months.
Yeah.
Again, hire me. what's the best sandwich?
The best sandwich. Oh, man. I was caught off guard by this difficult question.
It gets more fun now. So
okay.
The last three are more fun.
The best sandwich. Dude, that's hard. That's a really hard question.
So mine was, last time I was in New Orleans, went to some restaurant and had the barbecue shrimp po' boy. It's not like barbecue shrimp like you imagine it is with Texas barbecue, but they do it kind of a little bit different in New Orleans, obviously. And that was amazing. So I will say the barbecue shrimp po' boy that I had on Bourbon Street.
Sandwiches are an exceptional food item and so broad, right, as a genre. There's so much you can do with them. I love sandwiches. I mean, I love like your sub sandwich places. But yeah, your barbecue shrimp po' boy, that got me thinking. There are a few things that make me as content as just your classic chopped beef barbecue sandwich done right. And that is delicious, delicious.
What stuff. Is your what's your favorite barbecue place? This is just for me now.
My favorite barbecue place is Heart 8 in Stephenville. That's my favorite barbecue place. Closely followed by Heim. I would say Heim is my number two. I love Railhead a lot. But you know what? There's I haven't eaten at many barbecue places where I was like, well, that's...
Well, yeah, no, that doesn't really exist. But yes, I think my top two are Heim and Pecan Lodge that I've been to personally.
I've never been to Pecan Lodge.
It's real good, man. It's real good. Yeah. So, Heim, it's, though, again, it's up there with Heim. Like, Heim, like, you can't go wrong anywhere in the menu.
Literally, just thinking about the bacon burn-ins, yeah. My mouth
is watering. I have a gift card there. I might go get some today. Who knows? Yeah.
But it's Tuesday. I don't think they're open on Tuesdays.
Oh, well, I might go get some tomorrow then. Yeah. Stupid Chick-fil-A rules. Yeah. What's the worst song that you know every word to?
I know every word to a lot of songs.
Well, what's the worst one of them?
The worst, like, I don't know. Maybe Harvey the Wonder Hamster. That's a really short song.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
and don't sing it either. Okay. I can't afford the rights to it. I'll say Friday by Rebecca Black. Oh, I feel like okay. That's a very...
Yeah, it's, every it's, word.
Probably. I don't know. I haven't heard in a couple of years, but I feel like if I started hearing the beat, maybe I would hear it again, but I don't want to do that. I don't want to subject everyone to that.
Get my bowl, gotta grab cereal.
There you go. 31 game win streak if you agree to only shave your face once a year for the next 10 years. Yay or nay?
Yes. Yes.
You win 31 games, so starting now...
All you have to do is grow a beard and you win 31 games?
But you can only shave your face once a year for the next 10 years.
Yes.
I don't know, man. That'd be a big beard by the end of the year.
Well, that's
but it's all but it's all but that's for the next 10 years. The winning streak only lasts essentially what are the six? So 25 games. That would mean you win out this year, you win whatever bowl game, you go undefeated next year. So there's a natty next year, and then the next year you lose the Big 12 title game.
Yeah, I don't see the problem. I mean, especially too, like I feel like if you've had a beard for 10 years, it just becomes part of your. You know.
Yeah, but neither of us are ZZ Top or anything over here either.
Well, yeah, because we shave.
I know. So you're willing to go full castaway on this.
And then I could say, this is why. And people would be like, you're crazy. But I'd be like, no, this is why. Yeah, I have the beard.
But you are still crazy. Yeah. Get that show. You are.
But I'd be happy.
Happy like a fox.
Happy. Are foxes particularly happy?
I assume so. I don't know.
I haven't met many foxes.
No, well, that sounds like a shot at your wife right there.
No, she's a vixen.
Oh, a vixen.
Yes.
One of my favorite tweets ever was the TCU Texas Tech Fox game. Was it 2012 or 2013?
2013. I remember that game very well.
And I was like, have people ever paid attention? Sam Ponder's been on the field the whole game. Like, the fox game. But I'm bummed. But yes, I'm pretty sure you can't make that joke nowadays, honestly. Probably. Oh, I just got canceled. Oh, no.
Dang it, Billy.
No, that was fun while I was. Promotes on the quest.
Yeah, thanks for being loyal listeners to the podcast.
The podcast.
Which shall live on come hell or high water. We really appreciate y'all. Like, subscribe, give us a rating, share it with all of your friends, and evangelize about this podcast, which we are calling Toad Talk for now.
Toad Talk for now, and then, yeah.
And give me a follow on Twitter, @Clint_Foster55. Follow me on Instagram, @TheClintFoster. There you can see my video sketches. You can also find them on YouTube. Please look for the most recent one. That's TCU fans during the Kansas State game. I promise you, it's very funny. You will be able to laugh through the pain, and it will make this next bye week easier.
Hopefully, we'll make it easier. And again, I'm at Billy Wessels on Twitter and @Scoop_it on Instagram. Taking some getting used to with all that. But yeah, thanks for listening. And again, Toad Talk and Ta-Ta for now.